Okay, so when I walked into the session of in which I'm the last presenter of the last session of the last day, I introduced myself and I said, "Well, I have no idea how I ended up in your session because these folks all work together and kind of there was this theme." But I think I've listening found some ways to tie us together, or at least that's what I'll try and do. So the title of my talk is Training the Next Generation of Community Health Practitioners Through a New Multidisciplinary Undergraduate Course. I am part of a team where half public health and half architects, and we have been doing a lot of work together. We do a lot of teaching, and we sat down and thought, well, what do we need to do for our students to make an impact in the community in the future, right? So how do we train the next generation? So we came up with this big question, a very big question. How do we educate our students to become community-rooted? We feel like we really want to get people not just, you know, engaged or sometimes connecting with communities, but really rooted in their communities, their future communities, fundamentally interdisciplinary practitioners who are well-equipped to change the world. So, you know, we spent a lot of time thinking about this, and the best place to start was through a course. But we first had to think about what's going on in the context of the world of public health and of teaching, and there are three themes that we considered. First one is that the current complex problems in our world require new thinking to solve them, things like obesity and climate change, and we could probably sit here and list many others, and that there's an increase in interdisciplinary needs in our own practices. So the work that we're currently doing requires us to collaborate in ways we haven't before. And then there's new pedagogy and trends and styles in teaching right now. MOOCs, which are massive online open courses. There are these like huge, like hundreds of thousands could be people who can sign up for a course online. Flipped courses where you have things happening outside of the classroom and the use of social media. So just quickly on these themes, and I'm going to walk through this quickly so that I can hopefully connect us to their framework on the fly. So wish me luck. So first of all, we think of these large complex problems as wicked problems. It's not a new term. It's an old term. Obesity is probably in part the most wicked. This is my favorite concept map of obesity. It's a little bit hard to see, but the very center is energy balance, and each of these kind of pods represent a different aspect of obesity. Wicked problems, the term wicked problem came out of planning from a long time years ago, like in the 70s. And they are complex problems that we need, that have multiple causes, that there's, for which there's no single solution. They require iterative, long-term attention, and it's not resolvable. They're not resolvable by a traditional linear process. Another example of a wicked problem is global climate change. So the second kind of area is increase in interdisciplinary needs in the community, in our own practices. Some of our work is around the built environment and cancer survivorship. We can't just as a public health practitioner go out and do that ourselves. We have to work with planners, architects, designers, physicians, other healthcare professionals, and survivors. And then also the increasing use of health impact assessments. Again, it requires deep community engagement. It requires evaluation, planners, designers, et cetera. So our own work was requiring us to be more connected. Skip that. And then pedagogy. Around the time we were thinking about this, we attended this course design institute that was held at the University of Virginia, where we talked a lot about designing significant learning environments. So our courses, you know, gone are the Ferris Bueller days of boring lectures, but what could we design that were experiences that encouraged significant learning? We also talked a lot about the flipped classroom. So can we put more content outside of the classroom so that we have more collaboration inside the classroom? So if we're training the next generation to be more interdisciplinary, we need people to start talking to each other and working together. And can we do this in the classroom? And then teaching with technology, again, can we use that and social media to support learning outside of the classroom? And how do we kind of put all of these things together? So we developed this new course, Built Environment and Public Health, Local to Global. The content isn't novel, right? So transportation, food, you know, there are a lot of conceptual components of the course that people have been talking about for a long time, but we are putting it together in a new way. We decided to have it open to undergraduates and graduates. It was co-taught by myself and by Schaefer Summers, who's in the School of Architecture. And we framed it to address some of the themes that I just talked about. We announced it very late in the game in the spring of 2013, and we had we had 80 students sign up immediately. And so we said, well, there's definitely interest. So that we felt like we were good to go, but we were also a little bit overwhelmed that we had that many students. So it was really exciting because there were a mix of students. So they were mostly second, third, and fourth years, about 25% each. And then we had a few grads and a few first years. There were a lot of females, 80% female. Most of them used social media. We joked that it was only the grad students who weren't who didn't use social media. And then we asked them what their intended or actual major was. We had 16 different categories. The ones that popped up the most often were health and wellness related, biologic sciences, social science, and architecture or planning. These were very high achievers. And this is self-report, but this is not inconsistent with the students who go to UVA for undergrad. 97% said their average grade in high school were A's, and their current college GPA was 3.52. Almost half of them said that they were going to a healthcare-related field later on, some public service and some don't know. We also asked how engaged they currently were with some of the issues. So the one that popped up as the most engaged was volunteerism, which when we thought about it a little bit, we decided that that's because everyone has to volunteer to get into college, right? So they a lot of our students had been engaged with volunteering. And then probably the next, environmental issues and public health issues were probably the next most frequently mentioned, and then social justice. So I would say it was a somewhat engaged group, okay, across these issues, but not over the top. So we had three course goals that we put out to the students the very first day. The first one was that we wanted them to understand the components of and the relationships between the built environment and the health of individuals and populations. Second was that we wanted them to understand the complex and interwoven nature of the built environment and how different disciplines contribute to it. And the third is we wanted them to be able to participate in making the world more sustainable and just by connecting the themes of the course with their own lives through decisions they make, support for policies, and public communication. So we spent a lot of time thinking about what our significant learning activities, experiences would be, and we really focused on applying active learning. We wanted to either have them participate in real or simulated community and real-world collaboration. We were able to do this in two ways. We wanted them to get outside to explore the built environment, and we also wanted it to simulate this kind of collaboration that they were going to need in the future. So whether it was community university or whether it was architects public health, young, old, male, female, didn't matter. So we split them up into learning teams that were as diverse as we could possibly make them. We used social media to increase participation outside of the classroom and also so that they could practice communicating in public or pseudo-public about these issues. We issued prompts twice a week. Prompts were questions or activities that they had to go out and do and then respond on their social network. Each learning team had 8 students, and that was their network, and they really communicated within that learning team. Now, some of the learning teams did the very bare minimum. Some of the people in the learning teams did the very bare minimum, but some of them were extremely active, and this ended up being one of the greatest challenges of the course was keeping up with their discussions and you know, engaging with them in some way. So this is an example of one of the learning team members' pages. They have their it's like Facebook. You know, it's familiar to them. They have a page. They can, you know, annotate their page. They can write on different people's pages. This is a prompt that we had issued. It was one of the early prompts. We said, go out and take 3 pictures of things that you think might ameliorate obesity, and go take a picture of 3 things that you think might help prevent obesity, or help encourage obesity, and post those pictures and write a short paragraph as to why you think that is. And then everyone had to respond to those posts. So these are just some examples of those posts. We also had them complete a learning portfolio where they took all of their posts and all of the reactions to their posts, and they had to answer a set of questions about those posts. Again, this was in their learning team. And then, you know, this is where I think I can look at the framework, which I think would actually be really useful in teaching. So maybe next year we'll tell you how that goes. But, you know, I think, so this assignment, it's called an issue analysis, and we took a real problem, a real issue that was happening in Charlottesville, Virginia, where we live, where there was a road bypass that was proposed, and it was very contentious about whether or not it should be adopted or funded or not. And this went on for, you know, really 10 years, but it was very hot last fall. So we had each learning team do an issue analysis of this Route 29 bypass proposal. And really, there are some aspects in that kind of top right and bottom right quadrant, initiating change and advancing solutions, that really correspond to some of the assignments that they had to do as part of the issue analysis. So they had to do a lot of research, right? So they had to go out and talk to stakeholders. They had to identify what the pros and cons of the bypass would be. They had to, for each pro and con, they had to look for data that would support their pro or their con. So things that might impact the health, you know, road congestion, air pollution, and they had to go out and look for data that would support what they were saying. And they also had to use logic models in their analysis. So here's one team's logic model that helped them answer whether or not the bypass should proceed. And so if you look at the red on the right, that's where they identified what their short and long-term impacts of the bypass were, whether they were positive or negative. And here's another example. Again, they were identifying what the outcomes might be, both positive and negative. I don't expect you to read this, but we also made them take a stand, right? We made them actually say, so in summary, we believe that it should or shouldn't move forward, and we had them support that with their data and their logic model. Another example of where we were working with the community and collecting data, really, was we did a bike ped survey with the city of Charlottesville. They were just about to begin to assess our streets for walkability and bikeability. So we collaborated with them and with community members to implement this pedestrian environmental quality index, which we adapted to include biking as well. So Charlottesville has 168 miles of roads. Our class did the survey for about 12 miles of the city, and then helped frame it for the community for their work doing some of the other roads. We helped develop some of the materials for collecting and assessing each condition. We tried out the system that would be used to then go work with the community on this. We gave everyone an intersection ID, segment IDs. They did it electronically. We gave them kind of cheat sheets. So if you look at, let's say the top right, it's number 10, intersection traffic calming features. That was a line on the survey, and we explained to them, we all learned together what that meant, right? So how do you assess whether or not there was traffic calming at a certain intersection so you knew what to fill out on the survey? And we did this as a class, and then we turned it over and worked with the community to do some more of the roads. it was a very powerful, both of them, but this one was powerful in ways that we were surprised. We had like this group of activists after we did this. They're like, the roads are horrible. You know, someone's going to sue them because the sidewalks are cracked. And they became very active in the community, both UVA and city, in kind of changing the nature of the roads and the sidewalks. We also used this open source tool that UVA developed called Neatline, which is a mapping tool. And we did this to kind of help the city work with the community and show them, visually show them where some of our, you know, good areas for walking and biking are and where we need some help. So this is the entire set of segments all together, so it's a little hard to look at, but they're color-coded. So the greens are very walkable. The yellows are kind of not middle, not so great, but middle, and the red are not useful. And the purples have some special situations. And if you click on a dot, then you the pictures that students took will come up. And so this has been very useful for the city in future planning. So there were a lot of successes. I mean, I think the projects that the students worked on gave them a great taste for what it's like to work both kind of in the community and also for the community. A lot of their work was used in conversations around the 29 bypass and certainly for the walkability and bikeability survey. And so I think that was very satisfying for them and for us. And they practiced talking online, and that was really useful because we would comment on, you know, how they were communicating about certain things. They couldn't just say, oh, that sidewalk sucked, right, because that's not going to be useful. So we spent a lot of time. We actually would put some of their posts up and say, how can we – okay, so the sidewalk sucked, but if you were standing up in front of a group of people, how can we – say this so that people can hear it and maybe do something about it. So that, I think, was very useful. The challenges was, oh, my God, it was like the first time we taught it, and there was just a lot of content, a lot of moving parts, 77 students in the end. It was a tremendous amount of work, and we had to, like, in the middle of the semester, hire out of, you know, some slush fund somewhere a teaching assistant because we could not keep up with the post. It was like a 24/7 thing. But overall, we were pleased. Thank you.